Howdy-do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. This is December 17th, 2018. Happy Monday, everybody. I have two guests with us. First of all, Andrew Orr is with me. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing good for a Monday.
Yeah. Everything today comes with the asterisk of, you know, but for a Monday. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Andrew or John. Good morning. Seems right. Confusing to me for some reason.
Well, it might be. So, yeah. Something that I want to talk about that is apparently confusing some people is this hire that Apple has made. And all of us have some speculation about it. And we actively did not discuss our speculation. We're going to just do it all live on the show. But it sounds like we might all have the same theory. So, Andrew, do you want to tell us about this guy?
Yeah, so this month, Apple hired this guy named Andrew Kim. And he first got some traction back in 2012. He did this sort of experiment where he redesigned or created a design language for Microsoft called Slate Design, which I remember back in the day. I thought that was pretty cool. And Microsoft actually hired him after that. And then after Microsoft, he went over to Tesla. And then from Tesla, now Apple has hired him. And so the news here is that people are saying because he works at Tesla, maybe Apple has hired him to work on their car project. But personally, I don't think that's the case. I think, like, my opinion was that that whole car project Apple had was probably for their Apple Maps vehicles. I definitely don't think they're going to make a consumer car. Mm-mm.
So I agree.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's my theory as well, is that mine wasn't quite that specific, but that whatever automated vehicle it is that Apple's working on, it's not so that I can get in the car and ride to work instead of drive to work. Like, that was never what I assumed it was for. So I figured it was something like Maps. And, you know, Apple has a long history of location data stuff, like all that iBeacon stuff that we saw, you know, where, like, if you're in one end of a department store versus the other end of a department store, like, maybe different coupons show up on your phone in the app or whatever. You know, we've seen Apple do, you know, because Apple was one of the first, I think Apple was the first, John, you may want to fact check me on that, with Skyhook, I think is what it was called, which was a combination of Wi-Fi hotspots that are near you plus the reasonable GPS information you could get on, like, the first, second generation iPhone that would help you figure out where you were so that when you hit the little button on Maps, it was actually able to tell where you were. And Skyhook was a thing that did that, if I'm not mistaken.
By the way, if you ever get lost and you need, and you're on the phone and you're trying to tell somebody where you are, use the Compass app on your phone. It'll read out your exact latitude and longitude to the second.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
I think, so I'm with you on that. I always assumed it was, well, I always went into it with the assumption that it was not going to be a car like I could go and buy. Like, I always assumed whatever this driverless vehicle was going to be, it was going to have to be something where I would have to know someone who has a friend who works with them, and then maybe I could see one or something like that. You know, it was never going to be like, you know, it was never going to be something like I could just go buy, you know, like anything else. So, like, any other sort of consumer product. That's not how this works. So,
I was just thinking that there's maybe doors open when you have all these little armies of Apple vehicles scurrying around the United States, photographing and mapping and feeding data. What comes to mind is you could leverage off of that to a delivery service, compete against Amazon.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Because Amazon is how I talked to an Amazon driver the day. I was out for a walk and I bumped into him on the street and he said he gets paid by the hour. Mm-hmm. Instead of by the package, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get quite paid enough to use his own personal car. So and several of the guys in the neighborhood are renting cars for $40 a day from a rental service to get their cost under control. But they're still driving. And then some of them are using personal vehicles and rentals, and some of them are using Amazon trucks. I've seen brown Amazon Prime trucks driving around the neighborhood.
Interesting. I don't know if I've seen a Prime truck.
That's interesting that Amazon is, you know, hiring people to do that. And everybody else is trying to get away from hiring drivers.
Yeah, anyway. that's a thing that I've noticed as well, particularly because it's been a while ago now, but somebody came and dropped off a package at my house, and I happened to hear them outside, and then I went and looked out the door, and I'm like, it's just some dude in a car. Like, it wasn't like a big white delivery van. It wasn't like a delivery truck. You know, it was just, you know, like some dude in an Accord. And I'm like, what? Yeah. So it's been interesting to see the evolution of that over time, like from, you know, the standard issue delivery service to the stuff like this that Amazon's contracting out. So, I wonder what Apple's delivery service, because like, yeah, they could deliver their own stuff, but I wonder more like what else, like it wouldn't make it worthwhile for Apple to have their own delivery service if all they're going to bring you is iPhones, you know, and maybe AirPods.
Yeah. Plus there has to be some, you wouldn't. There'd be logistics of movement for great distances. You know, Apple's in California and somebody in New York orders a big Mac Pro or something.
Yeah.
You're not going to drive across the United States to do that. You still there has to be some logistics and air travel and cargo planes involved.
So the thing that I think about when I think about delivery service is stuff that, at least where I live out here in the Northwest, is really uncommon, and that's like food delivery. Like, there aren't a lot of places here that will bring food to you. Like, you can go get it, and that's where like a lot of those services have taken off, is because
I see people in the aisles with carts hunting for stuff that's on their list.
Grocery stores, some grocery stores offer delivery now. Restaurants, like in particular, like there's, pizza aside, I don't know that there's any restaurant I can call in town where I live in Portland that will deliver food to me. Now, I can have Uber Eats deliver it, or I think Grubhub, or there's, you know, a few of those sorts of services that work with other restaurants in town, and those people will bring me food, but from a restaurant, you know, some sort of takeout situation, but not a lot of places will deliver themselves. And so I wonder if
that special service that Jeff had as a sponsor a while back, a couple years ago, what was it, Blue something?
Well, Blue Apron brings you, that just brings you, like, that's grocery shopping, sort of. They bring you ingredients, and then you assemble all the food. Meals.
Oh, yeah, right. I read they were getting into financial trouble. Are they still with us?
That I don't know.
Blue Apron.
But I wonder if, I know there's a few other services that do the same sort of thing. Like, we bring you all the recipes and all of the ingredients for all of the meals, and then, you know, you just stick them in your fridge, and, you know, here's Tuesday, and you pull it out and have it.
Once you've got these robots scurrying all over the country, there's lots of things you can do.
Yeah. But I wonder about things like, you know, having, you know, my prescription delivered to me from the pharmacy, or, you know, food delivered to me from a restaurant, or other sorts of service kinds of things. I wonder if maybe that sort of service would be what Apple would get into, something really local. So, you know, if all I really need in life is something from the taco place, you know, a couple miles away, maybe I could get, you know, some Apple apparatus to bring me tacos. Like, that would be living in the future, right? I just wave my watch over the drone and then, you know, go get my food.
One thing I'm curious about, we hear an awful lot about Project Titan, and we hear these hires and people coming over and car projects and, you know, cars doing mapping and everything. And this requires a robot on wheels.
Yep.
But we never hear any rumors about Apple building individual family robots, though. Not a zero, nada. no leaks, no hires, no acquisitions. I find that very interesting.
Well, maybe this sounds crazy, John, and stay with me here, but maybe they're not building a family robot.
I think they should. Evidently, they're not. Evidently, they.
Yeah, I think the closest you're going to come to an Apple family robot is if you are able to find a way to securely mount your HomePod on your Roomba. I think that's the best you're going to do. I think that's the best you're going to get, honestly.
Well, I think that's an issue for Apple in the future, being able to keep up with the competition and change.
Well, yeah. Make note of that, because I know a lot of ways that Apple could keep up without a robot.
Remember when Steve Wozniak took his Apple One into his employer, Hewlett Packard, and said, I think we could sell a lot of these? And Hewlett Packard said, no, we don't think so.
Yeah.
So Wozniak went off and started his own company.
That's true.
Apple could fall victim to that in family robots at some point.
Well, we have a discussion that will include the bell about family robots on the horizon. I can tell already. But for now, what I do want to do is move on and talk about our sponsors. So our first sponsor today is OpsGenie by Atlassian. And with incidents, everybody has incidents, whether they're planned or they're unplanned. And they're inevitable. And what it really comes down to with those incidents is how your company responds. Prompt, precise alerting is the critical first step when you have an incident, again, planned or unplanned. And because applications are more complex than ever, incidents require complex coordination between operations and software development teams. That's where OpsGenie by Atlassian comes in. OpsGenie empowers DevOps teams to plan for service disruptions and stay in control during unplanned incidents. You have the power to respond quickly and efficiently, and you can make sure that the right people get notified so that they can respond, thanks to integrations with lots and lots of services. You can visit OpsGenie.com, OpsGenie.com, and you can sign up for a company account for free and add up to 5 team members. Now, our second sponsor today is JamfNow, and JamfNow helps you set up, manage, and protect Apple devices on demand. You get your account set up, you log into a web dashboard, and you have all that information right there at your fingertips. They support macOS and iOS devices, so everybody getting a new iPhone for Christmas or a new iPad for Christmas, maybe even a new Mac, you can get them all set up and ready to go. You can have those settings locked down so that people can't adjust them. You can also have other settings that are just available to be pushed out, so everybody's device can have all the right Wi-Fi information, or you can make sure people aren't accidentally deleting their Apple ID from their phones. And it's very easy to manage all of that right from the web. And the best part about it is that you don't even have to be in the same location as the device, as long as the device has a connection. So then you can log in and you can see serial numbers, operating system versions, and lots more. So 3 devices are supported for free, and you can add additional devices for $2 a month. Head over to the Jamf website at jamf.com/TDO, and you can sign up for your free account today. Now, our second topic today is something, John, that, excuse me, that you and I have discussed, and that is the cost of Apple ownership. And this goes back to the particle debris article you wrote on Friday.
Yeah, and that pointed to, as I do, I usually lead with a particle debris article of the week, and this one was a cool one, from two editors at the Washington Post, Jeffrey Fowler and Andrew Van Dam. And they looked into the high cost, the rising cost of Apple products and the effect it has on customers, and the psychology of the situation and the finances of the situation. The title was, Your Apple Products Are Getting More Expensive. Here's how they, Apple, get away with it. And there were a couple of interesting conclusions about that they came to. One, Apple sells expensive products as a luxury brand, tries to avoid becoming commoditized and prices sinking into commodity levels. But Apple does sell inexpensive products, if you wish. And instead of buying an iPad Pro with 256 gig of RAM and spending $1,200, you could buy an iPad 9.7 inch for $329. Instead of buying an iPhone XS Max with Apple Care and 512 gig of RAM for $1,800, you could buy an iPhone 7 for, I think, about $400. So these products are for sale, but and many people buy those products. But a lot of people are loyal to Apple. They're into the ecosystem. They have other supporting equipment like MacBook Airs and the Apple Music, and so they're part of the ecosystem. And because of their predilection for Apple as a quality product, they tend to want to, a few of them tend to want to buy the latest and greatest all the time. We're familiar with that psychology. And Apple cleverly leverages off of that, and they know that there's a certain percentage. It's enough that people who want a new product, a new phone every year, are going to pay for it. And their average selling price goes up, and their revenues go up. And it's just shrewd business practices. But the article points out that, you know, if you don't want to spend that much money, you can keep your phone for 2 or 3 years. The average holding time before people upgrade is has drifted from 2 years now up to 3 years. So you can buy inexpensive Apple products and you can delay the upgrades, and you know, you don't have to have the latest and greatest. So the article goes into that psychology.
Well, and I think that's something that we've seen, particularly as Apple's come out with new products and those products have matured. So, you know, with the iPhone, there's not necessarily a fundamental new feature in every model, every fall, so that you feel like you are totally missing out if you don't have one. You know, yeah, I feel like I'm missing out by not having an iPhone 10. But why is that? It's not because of Face ID. It's not because I really want more screen and an even bigger phone that doesn't fit in the front pocket of my jeans. It's because Animoji and Memoji are hilarious and ridiculous and wonderful, and I want them. And so that's the only reason I feel like I'm missing out. It's not Apple Pay. It's not Touch ID. It's not a camera, you know, a better camera. It's not this camera shoots video now. You know, it's not any of the stuff that was like a key feature that helped turn the iPhone into what it is. You know, it's Memoji.
Well, Face ID was one of those that did it for me. I mean, I was skeptical about the relative security, and I was skeptical about the utility and skeptical about the loss of a physical home button to bail you out. But having bought an iPhone 10 last year, which has been handed down to my wife, I really enjoy Face ID. It's fast. It's convenient. It took me about 30 seconds to learn the new gestures on a Touch ID less phone. You know, it's, and I think it's been a great leaping point for Apple to to move ahead. So,
but it doesn't feel to me, it doesn't feel like, like I already had a fast, convenient way to unlock my phone without having to remember a passcode most of the time. So that didn't seem to me like, yes, it's a huge change in how you interact with your phone because of all the other stuff that goes with going, getting rid of the home button. But I wasn't, there wasn't a thing for me that made me go, wow, I just, you know, I really wish I'd given up my home button. So I'm, I like, as a phone, it's really fast and it has a great camera, you know, whichever one you have, if you have anything that supports iOS 12, your phone is pretty fast. Your camera is pretty great. You know, you could use it as a document scanner. If it's running iOS 12, I know you could use your phone as a reasonably passable document scanner, you know, take pictures of receipts or paperwork that you need for, you know, something else that needs to be OCR'd. You can do that with your phone. You know, you can look things up, you can pay for stuff, you can unlock things securely. Like, all of those things are really useful and really great. And, you know, if you're a person who has a slightly older phone, maybe you have a 6 or a 7 or a 6S, you're still really happy with what you have. Generally, like, for the most part, like,
this article, the authors of this article mentioned the 6S specifically. And they mentioned that people will ride their 6S into the dirt until its wheels come off.
Yes. Yes.
It's a beloved phone, and people are going to... My wife held on to her 6S for years. She didn't want to give it up.
Yeah, mine was pressed into extra service because Mr. Kelly had a 6 and I had a 6S. And then when the 8, at some point, his 6 became, it had battery issues, surprise, and it became unusably uncomfortable. And so when I went to the 8, he got my 6S. Because that's what I was using. And I, because I was like, I don't need a 7. And so then, like, mine went into extra service. And then, even for a while, ended up being a phone. I don't remember who we loaned it out to, but I had to loan it to somebody who's, somebody else in my family, whose phone wasn't working like it should have. And they were able to use that very happily until they were able to upgrade their own phone and get something newer. So I think... I think there's more to this, but I think part of it is that people are more willing to pay more when the technology itself was making great leaps and bounds. Like right now, I really like the new iPad Pro, but the iPad Pro I have from last year also I really like. It makes me very happy. It's very usable. It's very fast. It works really well with the Apple Pencil. All of that stuff is great. And now I have fended off the USB-C cable creeping into my house for another year or so. So I've been really happy with it. And I think that's part of where I don't feel necessarily like I need to be all that loyal, because everything I have is really solid and works pretty well. Andrew, how about you?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I was actually thinking about getting one of the new iPad Pros this weekend, but I have a hard time justifying the purchase just because my MacBook Pro sitting here works perfectly fine. And, you know, I'm over here rocking my iPhone 7 Plus, which I'm completely happy with. So I'm probably going to be using that for a couple more years as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you not have an iPad now?
My mom gave me her old iPad. It's like an iPad Air 1, I think.
Okay.
Which is pretty slow.
They can be. Yeah, it's something that, because I still have an original one, an original Air. I use it as my development device.
Oh.
So, like, I've installed betas on it and stuff, and so sometimes it has a little harder time, but I think that is generally more the issue of beta software than it is the actual hardware itself, because it's a fine device by itself. So... I have found that works pretty well overall. So yeah, you might want to upgrade though. I'm not trying to enable you into all of this expensive Apple stuff, but yeah, the new iPad is pretty nifty.
Yeah, I probably will. Like, I think iOS 13 will be another iPad focus one, so I'll probably get excited around that time and get one.
That might work. That's a good answer. John, you have the new iPad, right? Was that one that we discussed?
No, I have an iPad Pro from 2015, the 12.9-inch.
Oh, okay.
And it suits me fine, and I was pondering whether I needed to buy a 2018 iPad Pro.
Yeah.
Either 11 or 12.9. Haven't decided yet, but I'm kind of thinking I don't really need it yet. It's a kind of a luxury item.
But John, it's a 12.9-inch iPad. This is your dream machine. We've talked about this.
I have a 12.9, and it's doing everything I need it to do, and it's pretty fast. It's got an A10X.
Okay.
It's awfully fast, and it's got an awfully beautiful big screen. And I've got an Apple Pencil 1.0 with it, and I'm kind of cruising with that, so I don't see... I spent my $1,000 on the 10S Max.
Oh, okay. There's your Apple budget.
Which I love. Yeah. I can't use a small phone.
Right.
Every time I get a chance, I buy a bigger and bigger phone, and this 10S Max is awesome. And now when I handle my wife's 10 to do a software upgrade or something or mess with it, I go, wow, this iPhone 10 is a small phone. I could never go back to that.
See, I get like nostalgic for the smaller models, because I'll pick it up for some reason and be like, oh, who's a cute little phone? I love you so much. I can reach everything. It's so nice.
That's why there's no SE2.
I know.
Because a segment of the population loves the small phone, but there just aren't enough of those people.
Yeah. I have a lot to say about the SE2. So we may have to save that for another show as well. For right now, I want to talk. I want to thank both of you for being here today. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And also, John, thanks for coming on today and talking to me about Apple costs.
Thanks for having me, too.
And with that, we're going to go ahead and call it. This has been the Daily Observations Podcast from the Mac Observer for Monday, December 17th, 2018. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. Until then, be excellent to each other.